Here at the FS Green Plan in Pursuit of Maximum Yields Conference, we heard from Gary Bays, who is an agricultural law attorney in Washington, D.C., has a number of clients, including the wheat growers, as well as
the ag retailers that obviously GrowMark and lots of other folks are members of. And I'm outside general counsel for U.S. Grains, which is the main exporting arm for corn, sorghum, and barley here in the country. So I have a wide range of general counselships, but by and large, I try cases around the country defending agricultural interests on environmental issues. They say I'm an ag lawyer. I'm an ag environmental lawyer because I'm in a very narrow niche on the environmental side.
You talked about water challenge, and you addressed that a little bit with the Chesapeake Bay. There's many, many other examples of that. But you also talked about air challenges. And one of the things you discussed was the RFS2. Talk to me a little bit about that.
RFS2 can be actually, I think, a great opportunity for agriculture if it's applied correctly. Now let's put this into context. RFS2 for our listeners is Renewable Fuel Standard Number 2. There was obviously a Renewable Fuel Standard Number 1. And that is driven by the 2007 Energy Act, which is an amendment of the 2005 Energy Act. What Congress said was that, okay, at that time we were burning about 140-some-odd billion gallons of gasoline a year. I think it was 144 billion to be exact. Mm-hmm. I think now with the recession we're down to about 135 billion gallons that we burn a year. Congress, in its usual conniption fit way, said, by golly, we've got to become much more dependent on our own sources without looking at our own oil and gas reserves. And again, very good lobbying by the corn growers here in the state and Iowa and nationally, said, okay, we've had gasohol. Let's have a mandate of so many percentage points of ethanol put into our gasoline. Now, how this is driven, and how I mentioned it in my speech, but without going into all the excruciating legal details, the country is divided up into attainment and non-attainment areas for ozone. What we want to do is to have very clean burning fuel. Now, as we know from the Indianapolis 500, ethanol burns very hot and very fast. But ethanol only has 77,000 BTUs per gallon, gasoline about 120,000. So EPA says, okay, we need an oxygenate. We can't continue to use this chemical called MTBE. Mm-hmm. For those of you in non-attainment areas in the country, we're going to require you, and you can go around the gas pumps, I'm sure here, well, certainly in Chicago, and it'll say 10% ethanol required, okay? Now, what the corn grower said, wait a minute, the Energy Act said that we can go up to 15, 16 billion gallons of ethanol under the Energy Act and RFS2. We can get there with corn ethanol. And that's why EPA is going to 15% for certain model years, back to 2001. If you have a 2001 or forward car, you can burn E15. That obviously takes up, 36% of the corn crop, 36.3, I think. The law requires 36 billion gallons of non-fossil fuels to be burned out of that 135 billion. And hopefully that obviously lessens our reliance on Middle Eastern oil. Now we're getting into the food versus fuel debate. People say, oh my God, we can't take 36% and put it into fuel. What they never talk about is that out of that 56 pounds of corn, 17 pounds, that goes into DDGs and we're selling that. Pretty good price, you know, not a bad deal. But at the end of the day, this is all about a policy that can change. Right now the policy is burn fuel that we can grow. The American farmers responded to that. We have responded to it magnificently. As a result, EPA has now said all gasoline in this country is going to have 10%. So that's 135 billion, all right? 10% is pretty easy to figure out. 13,500 million gallons, yeah. If we go to 15%, then that gets us up to what's called the blend wall, 16 billion, roughly, 16 billion gallons. Beyond that, it has to be cellulosic fuel. Now, that can come from grain sorghum, because they're working on that. The fight we have going on in California is California says it takes so much energy to create corn ethanol. We want ethanol from sugar. The Brazilians are not dumb. They can sell their sugar cane for sugar and not convert it into ethanol and do very well. Thank you. But there are those in California who do not, and in EPA, who do not want to use corn ethanol. But RFS2 has in it huge sections that deal with Illinois agriculture, Iowa agriculture, because it says, we think we can take, this is EPA talking now, we can take up to 40% of the corn stalk and shuck and cob that's left on the ground, 40%. And EPA said we need 80 marshalling yards or warehouses around the country to handle all this corn. What they don't quite have worked out yet, I think, are the economics on this. But certainly EPA is saying we want to get away from the usage of fossil fuel, yet we're sitting on a trillion barrels of oil out here in the Bakken Basin. We're sitting on billions of barrels off of our own coast. Those are all driven by government policies. Government policy is driving the demand for ethanol. It's risky, risky, risky. But right now, as they say on Wall Street, don't fight the tape. I'm saying don't fight the tape here because it is EPA and Congress. Until Congress changes and until I think this president, because I think he listens to Harkin, a friend of his, obviously a very strong ethanol supporter. Mr. Durbin, I would suspect, is probably his most influential advisor on ag issues. So ethanol is going to be around for several years to come. Policy is driving this, not the marketplace. But we in agriculture right now, all of us here today, are benefiting from $6 corn and $13, $14 soybeans, in part driven by these policies.
Food for thought for farmers in pursuit of maximum yields. Here in Peoria, I'm Cindy Zimmerman.